Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divi Nation. Divi Nation is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a proud leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. Now, the goal of Divi is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. In this episode, I'll be interviewing none other than Nick Roach, the founder and CEO of Elegant Themes. Since the launch of Divi Nation last year, Nick has far and away been the most requested guest on the show, and I'm really glad that we finally got him on, and we're taking questions from you guys to ask him. So if you followed along via the blog and Facebook, then you know that the last week I visited the home offices of Elegant Themes in downtown San Francisco, where Nick, Mitch, and Andy work from. Mitch and Andy being our operations director and front-end developer, respectively. Andy was actually just on the show 2 weeks ago. It was a great visit. I got to introduce Gino Quiros, a past guest of the podcast and one of our most active and upstanding community members, to the team. And of course, while I was there, I took the opportunity to sit down with Nick in person and ask him the questions that you, the Divi Nation, submitted via email, Facebook, and blog comments. Here's our conversation. Nick, welcome to Divi Nation.
Hey, I'm happy to be here, finally.
Yeah.
I know it's been a long time coming, but I've been really enjoying watching the podcast. I'm happy to be on it finally. So, yeah.
That's awesome. You're by far the number one requested guest.
Yeah, that's great.
I think everybody's looking forward to all the questions that they've submitted, getting answers to everything, and just kind of getting to meet you in person. Mitch actually was talking to me the other day. He said you haven't done an interview really since, like, I don't know, 7 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, no interviews. I remember I did one way back in the day, back in college. Yeah, I forget that it was for like the design.mag.ag. I don't know. Yeah, so long ago, but yeah, it's been a while. I usually turn away interview requests because
this will be like the ultimate exclusive for Elegant.
Exactly.
Themes.
Yeah.
Well, you did it the right way. You started your own podcast, and now you get to give the exclusive to your own company. So
indeed.
One of the things I think is awesome is, you know, by the way, I just want to say I love being here in the office and meeting you in person. I mean, we've been working together on the blog since 2014, and this is the first time we've seen each other in person, so this is pretty cool.
It is really cool to have you here, and yesterday, Gino, one of our, you know, favorite customers came by, and we all got dinner, and it was a really great, fun day, and we got to spend time with him as well.
That was a blast.
So it's great getting to know you and him. It's really amazing the way this company has kind of been run over these years, all remote employees. So we haven't got the chance to meet very many people, and we do. It's really a special opportunity. And in fact, we are doing our first company trip, as you know, this year in Berlin. So bringing together the product team, it's going to be really awesome chance to get to know everyone on a deeper level, do some brainstorming.
How long has it been since you've seen some of the other members of the ET team?
Yeah, so most of the team, we've never actually gathered together in person.
Since day one.
Since day one, yeah. So, you know, we do video conferences, a lot of chatting on Slack. You know, most of our workflow is done on GitHub. But, going from, you know, knowing people just through chat to then knowing them, you know, through video and then finally get to know them in person, it's pretty cool. And there's been people who've worked with us for 7 years now, and we've never actually met in person. So it's crazy to think about. But it's kind of like a natural thing, I guess, for WordPress. There's a lot of companies that do this that kind of, you know, it's a global community.
Yep.
A lot of that global talent is, you know, everywhere. It just kind of happens naturally. Yeah, in fact, Yuri, our first employee and our lead developer, amazing developer, we met over Twitter way back in the day.
When was that, like 2005, 2006, something like that?
I was just tweeting out like, hey, I need some help on the support forums, and I got a tweet from this guy, and that was like, you know, the beginning of the new era of Elegant Themes, one tweet, you know, and we still haven't met. Him and his wife both work with the company. So
wow, that's
we're
amazing.
We're all gonna get together in Berlin. It's gonna be really cool.
I know, I'm looking forward to it. That's gonna be awesome. Well, one of the first things I like to ask people to kick off the show is sort of like a, hey, what's a day in your life like? But we're doing all community-generated questions this time. So Eileen Lonergan actually submitted a question very similar, and we'll get stuff started off with that, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure, man. Well, my daily routine has changed quite a bit over the past, you know, 8 years now I've been running the company. These days, I've had to work hard to to make my routine more normal, you know, more healthy, which is just to say that I'm trying to get, you know, the right amount of sleep, get up during normal hours. I mean, you can imagine back when I first started the company back in college, and then even the first person to join the team, Yuri in Russia, literally opposite schedules. So a lot of times I was staying up really, really late, you know, battling not only the challenges of the business, but the challenges of schoolwork, and then, you know, the scheduling problems. And
how long did you have per day to really work? Well, two questions.
Well, 24 hours, right?
Well, and then the follow up to that is, you know, because you guys were apart, so far apart, what was how much overlap did you have to actually collaborate while you're both awake?
I mean, we made it work. So we both kind of adjusted our schedules naturally, I think, through working so closely together, and the rest of the team too. Kind of found ways. I mean, in college, I was, you know, staying up to all hours, I guess. it was pretty rough. It was a good kind of rough. It was like, you know, fulfilling to work that hard. But you know, my friends would kind of make fun of me or like think I was crazy. Like coming to class, like having barely slept, my hair was like insane. It was like this, but like sticking up, you know. Kenny. I went to college with Kenny, actually.
Oh, okay.
Our previous lead designer. And we reminisce about those times where it's like we'd all be up in the lab. The design program, I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. The design program was pretty intense, as most college programs. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes like the design part of the school got like everyone thinks like all the designers are just like have a free ride, not doing any work. But I tell you what, man, people were in that lab until all hours, till 3-4 a.m. And then I'd have to go home and answer like 200 emails. You know, because I was doing all the emails back then. Which is one of the biggest obstacles to overcome. Actually, was like, man, how do I free myself up so I actually, you know, make themes again when I'm spending literally like half my day answering emails.
Well, I'm sure we're gonna get into that with some of these other questions. Let's jump to the next one. This is mine, actually. Well, so to preface this question, what I wanted to do is kind of jump back from Elegant Themes time and talk about just leading up to Elegant Themes, what maybe some of your influences were. So this is. My question is, what were some of your earliest or most formative business experiences prior to launching Elegant Themes in college? Yeah.
Well, it's funny to look back, you know, and think about all like the silly business things I did as a kid. Really, I guess I was always kind of interested in making things and selling them. You know, I don't know why. I guess now I can kind of think about, well, why do I find that fulfilling? I guess it's because, well, first of all, there's like nothing more fulfilling than building something, I think. Mm-hmm. And then even more fulfilling than building something is building something that other people like, you know, and to see someone purchase, you know, something you made with your own hands is like, it was so cool. So looking back, I mean, I think that must be why I was so into it, but.
What were some of the things you created?
I think the first, I was actually just reminiscing about this with Mitch the other day at a party, but one, the earliest business I can think of that I created was me and my friend. There was this candy that was really popular in school in third grade. It was called Crave. I mean, maybe some people are familiar with this candy. It was like, it came in a vial. It was just basically like sour sugar and you poured it in your hand and you ate it. And it was like, literally like the kids were all over this Crave stuff. And it was like $1.50 for a canister of it. And so we started taking the vials and filling it up with something cheaper. But it tasted basically the same, which was Kool-Aid. So we bought like little vats of Kool-Aid powder.
Oh, wow.
Fill up these vials. And so we started like experimenting with other flavors. Like, and then when it finally ended is when we had the bright idea to grind up Altoids into this white powder and put it in vials and start selling it to the kids.
That probably didn't go over too well.
No, I mean, we had those desks. And I don't know, we had these desks where it's like, you lifted up the top and you had like all your books and stuff in the desk, and my desk was filled with all these vials of white powder and I got sent to the principal's office. So I was doing silly stuff like that my whole childhood. My grandparents actually were, they built things and sold them. They built wind chimes and sold them at a roadside stand their whole life. You know, they would salvage old glass bottles, cut them up and make these really beautiful wind chimes. And I started making like things like that. Like, it made these beaded lizards, and I would, like, my grandpa offered to go sell them at his stand. So that was really cool. It was, like, the first time I had really kind of, like, had an experience where I built something and then sold it like that, you know. It felt like a real business transaction, you know. And, in fact, they sold so well that he ended up shutting it down because, I guess, like, kind
of... You started
like,
to become known as the beaded lizard guy?
Well, no. I think, like, the social dynamic of a roadside stand is that you... Sometimes you go there to maybe commemorate your trip or whatever you did, and you kind of feel obliged to buy something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe they saw the lizards as an easy way out,
Oh, so I got
like,
you.
Well, they can buy the $20 wind chime or like the $5 lizard.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You undercut your grandparents.
Yeah, basically.
Well,
yeah.
So I guess lesson-wise, did you have anything that like, you know, from those early years that when you approach business early on or later in life that you kind of stuck with you? Lessons that kind of stuck with
you?
Well,
I think the major lesson is that I guess I learned early on that it's really possible to do this kind of stuff. You know, it's not out of reach at all. You can make something and sell it, and it's not this crazy concept or even a particularly difficult concept, you know, as long as what you're selling is good and there's demand for it. And it was probably a lot easier as a kid when they kind of bought things from you to, because you were cute or something, you know.
All right, let's jump to another question here. Rick Tolls asks, where do you receive business guidance from, both past and present? And I guess that's excluding your personal experience early on.
Yeah. I mean, I really just kind of stumbled into most of this stuff and learned from, you know, practice and failure and this kind of stuff. But some of kind of like the basic resources I enjoy online are Mixergy.com.
Okay, yeah, great podcast.
Yeah, so like it's basically interviews with a bunch of different CEOs and you kind of learn from their experiences. It's like an amazing resource. So I highly recommend anyone's kind of getting into business to go there. When I was younger, I mean, followed some of the bigger kind of like social celebrities like Gary Vaynerchuk and that kind of stuff.
Gary V.
Yeah, really, really fun to watch, you know, these kind of like really successful people with great personalities. And so yeah, that's kind of my two recommendations.
Oh, cool. All right. Jonathan Yair. And by the way, everybody, these questions have all kind of been edited for clarity and in some cases length. So if you're looking at your comments and you're wondering, why isn't it the exact wording that I submitted? We just tried to clean things up to make it flow a little bit better, easier for us to ask each other. So when did you start learning about the web and design/development?
Yeah, so the first website I made was me and my friend Ben had this band back in middle school in seventh grade. And he's like this amazing musician. I was kind of just tagging along. I learned to play drums. It was really fun, but I had this bright idea that we should make a website. And so I kind of experimented online with that stuff. I started a site on angelfire.com, which was the kind of like GeoCities. I forget it was like before or after GeoCities, but it was this kind of like free website hosting service with like some kind of like template builder in there. I remember you could add the header and footer to get in there to the HTML and stuff. I remember I made this just horrendous website. It was like black background, like 000 black, and then these beveled red bordered tables and red text, and somehow I made the text move. I don't know how I made it move.
But so what you're saying is there's hope for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. You can start there and get somewhere, yeah, with practice.
Let's see. SJ asks, I assume at one point that theme development was just one project among many for you. When did you know that this was what you wanted to do and what drove that decision?
You know, I don't think I ever really made this decision that I was going to become a theme developer. I did kind of stumble in it, but before I was selling themes, I was selling just static HTML templates.
Okay.
I think, and then moving from there onto theme development, I just started making themes. I kind of, you know, just stumbled onto WordPress, you know, by happenstance. I mean, it was getting popular in the early days, and there was some demand on the, you know, the forums back then for WordPress themes on DigitalPoint, really popular forum, maybe still popular today.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. So I'd make themes and then sell them on the classified section of the forum. Oh. That's literally how I was making money in high school. I had to make these like templates and themes and sell them in forums and the classified ads.
Oh, wow. So that started. So you were making templates and themes not for WordPress at the beginning, but then eventually for WordPress. Mm-hmm. And you were selling those through a classified section.
Yeah. Well, it kind of started with, you know, I progressed from, I made this band website and I kind of became more interested in the website than the band, kind of moved on from there, and I was just learning tutorials online. Really got into Photoshop. There's always tutorial websites back then, and I started my own. It was called Voidix.com. The name doesn't mean anything. Voidix. And I started writing my own tutorials, and that was really kind of my first popular website. It actually gained some traction. It was getting like thousands of visitors a day, and I made my first dollar on Google AdSense.
I remember doing that on a Blogger blog. Feels pretty special when that happens.
It did,
it's like a little milestone.
Yeah, and then that's when I moved on to kind of like trying to sell templates on that site.
Nice. All right, let's see what else we got. Joan asks, did you have a plan for where the business would go, or did you have to learn a lot about business on the fly when you found yourself running a company? And I think you kind of already started to address that, but maybe you can expand on that.
Yeah. No, I don't think I can't say I had some master plan, no. And it was a lot of learning on the fly, really. Learning from your mistakes and that kind of stuff, and a little bit of luck maybe. But
Fabio says, what were the most difficult challenges you faced when Elegant Themes was a startup?
I kind of spoke to them earlier, and the most difficult times in the Elegant Themes history was when I was in college, just really struggling to find the time or to decide, you know, what my priority would be, you know, school or the website. And it was kind of this big battle in my mind because I wasn't good at giving up at something, you know.
Sure. You didn't want to loosen your grip on either one.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was the biggest challenge, was finally making the decision to drop out of college and focus on Elegant Themes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it wasn't an easy decision. So doing that, and then scaling kind of like my own time by hiring, you know, my first employee and second employee, and doing these things to alleviate the kind of the really time consuming tasks that I didn't really need to be doing necessarily. The main one being emails and tech support in the day. And one of my first United States employee was also my best friend, Mitch.
Oh yeah,
And I brought him on to kind of relieve this pre-sale email burden from me. But I felt kind of really uncomfortable doing it because I felt like my identity was so tied so closely to the company, where I was like the person on Twitter, I was the person on email, I was the person giving support. And so like people would, you know, write in to Elegant Themes, but they'd write in to Nick.
Specifically.
So it was like, I felt so connected. I didn't want to give it up. I was like really anxious.
That still happens today, by the way.
I was really anxious about not being the one actually conversing with the customers directly. And so I think really it was just the biggest obstacle was making these kind of tough decisions, like choosing to focus on the business, allowing myself to give up certain responsibilities and put trust in other people who were probably a lot better. And Mitch is a lot better than me at doing that. He was a lot better at that, and he's a lot better at what he does now as director of operations. Yeah.
Yeah. Mitch is great, by the way, everybody. If you don't get to interact with him, he's awesome. Okay. Went a couple ahead. So here we go. David Blackman asks, when did growth happen? You know, what was the one thing that launched ET into the stratosphere, or was it more of a slow and steady thing?
So it couldn't be more slow and steady. It's literally, if you look at the growth graphs, and it's like the straightest line possible, which is like almost amazing to me, because obviously there's seasonal trends and trends within the company as we make, you know, certain innovations that do well, do better than others. But year to year, the growth has been exactly straight. So it's really been about persistence, I think.
There was no
moment where we kind of launched into the stratosphere.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people now, because so many people in our community are using Divi, and Divi itself has been something of a phenomenon theme. I think they might assume that kind of catapulted the company, but you were doing quite well before that and kind of...
Yeah, well, I mean, Divi was a major turning point in the company for growth, but only because I think if we didn't have that, we would have been...
We would have started to decline.
We would have flatlined, probably.
Okay, yeah.
And then there was this point where a lot of theme companies, you know, a couple of years ago, a lot of theme companies were kind of throwing in the towel because there's a lot more competition out there. And we were seeing that kind of like the growth start to flatline a little bit, or to lessen out. And then we made the difficult decision to double down on this new theme and really kind of take a year out of theme development. And at this time, it was actually kind of a thing that a lot of our customers were angry about at first. Like, we were releasing a theme every single month.
And that'd be kind of what you were known for.
But that wasn't working anymore. People didn't need a bunch of themes that we'd kind of already made. You know what I mean? We were kind of making themes to make themes at this point.
Yeah.
And the designs were getting better, but, you know, kind of like incrementally, but they weren't really filling new voids in the demand, you know, the market demand. So we decided to take a whole year to develop this one theme, Divi, and the whole time is like people were, you know, angry on the comments, like trying to like, you know, say, don't worry, like we're working on something really good.
Yeah.
And then when we did, it totally kind of revitalized the company. We went back on track on that kind of steady line. Yeah.
Amazing. That's awesome. Tim Striffler, he wants to know, what are some of the issues that you ran into while scaling the company, and how did you overcome them?
So again, like I kind of spoke to this, which is, I think the biggest scaling issue was with support and kind of like committing to hiring someone else to help me, and then hiring our team even larger, which is now dozens of people on the support team.
Let's see. We got some more here. Sarah wants to know, what does your creative process look like, and how has that changed over the years?
So yeah, my creative process is kind of like just mad sketching in Photoshop. You know, I mean, these days there's other programs you can like InVision and Sketch, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. You can kind of use to get your ideas down. But I really like to just jump right onto the computer and kind of throw down some blocks of color, maybe get an artboard going of some inspiration, you know, go to Dribbble, find some stuff you like, you know, start with the basics, choosing a color palette, choosing some fonts, this kind of stuff. And just kind of like, usually whatever you start with is completely different by the time you're done with it, you know? Mm. So it's really about just like committing to working on something and then kind of just massaging it into, you know, something good. And I think it just kind of happens naturally as you work. But our creative process, the team has changed a lot as we've gotten bigger. I mean, like our workflow now, I mean, back in the day it was more just, you know, me making a design, handing it off to the developer and the developer developing it. And then we shipped it. You know, these days, like there's so many people using our themes, so many people using Divi, that the workflow has become like a multi-step process. It's like, you know, it goes from, you know, ideation to some design, you know, talks with me and Mario, our lead designer, which then goes on to the development process. And there's usually like a couple of different development teams and then, you know, code that gets committed gets, you know, goes through a series of peer reviews and
all this stuff.
And so it was hard to kind of get this down to where we were actually, the creative process was something that helped us instead of hindered us. Because there's this time where we were kind of lost in a sea of GitHub issues, you know, and lost in a sea of ideas. And we recently started using ZenHub, which is really great. So anyone on GitHub, definitely look into ZenHub. And then they just released this new Epics feature, which is cool. You can kind of like coordinate or organize issues inside of issues on GitHub, which is really great. So that's been really a really big win for our creative process here as we work on like the next big things. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Andrew Palmer asks kind of a two-parter here. What is your process for choosing staff, security, access to dev servers, et cetera? And we'll start with that one. So can you speak to that?
Staff and security. So choosing staff, I mean finding new people is one of the biggest challenges for me as a business owner. It's like finding the right people. There's a lot of competition out there. And so you have to create a culture that's inviting and we get a lot of great people just through referrals. So people who know people, that's how we find some of our best employees. But
about managing permissions and access to things?
So I mean, we have like a tier of, you know, developers here. So our lead developers, you know, have commit access to our repos. You know, like support staff has read access, no write access, kind of basic stuff. But there's nothing on like our GitHub repos that are no mission critical information, you know. So really that stuff is locked down and I'm really the only one that has access to kind of the mission critical stuff of the server. The SSH keys are just encrypted on my own.
And it seems like, I mean, at a certain point, if you're giving someone responsibilities, you kind of have to just trust them with the things within their own purview.
I mean, I think definitely in the beginning, you kind of had to make that leap of faith and just base them on their merits and their experience. But now, as the company's a little bit bigger, I mean, we kind of have more of a, you know, a hierarchy in place. And I think people can kind of like kind of gain trust in the company and that kind of stuff. And so as far as like committing code, like a lead developer always has to sign off on any code that's committed. And before that, the code has to go through QA. And, you know, this kind of stuff. And I think just over time, kind of, you might graduate to lead developer if you prove yourself. And by then, you've kind of gained trust.
Nice. And the second part to this question is, how do you manage quality control for your brand overall? So products, blogs, and you talked a little bit about that just now, but if you have anything else to add to that.
I think the only other thing really is the brand. And I kind of, we hire people that are, you know, good people, you know, so hopefully no one's going to go out and make an ass of themselves you know, on Facebook or something. So I trust everyone, you know, wholeheartedly that works here. And then you've done an amazing job on the blog and you do all the quality control there with our writers. And
thank you. let's go to the next. Keith Davis, he's asking, are you surprised by the way that Divi has become somewhat of a cult theme / culture community?
Yeah, I'd say I'm absolutely surprised and amazed and, you know, enjoyed by the community that's developed around Divi. It's like my, you know, you can kind of get a taste of it on Facebook and all these Facebook groups.
That have
popped up. And now, I mean, my Facebook feed is completely dominated by Divi everything. Like, I don't get anything from my friends anymore. It's like Facebook knows that I like spend a lot of time in those groups, and I love it in there. And I think, I can't really take credit for the community, you know? Yeah. I mean, but it's just such an amazing community that's developed. But I think part of it, speaking from a business perspective, I think it comes down to our business model, which is a membership.
Yeah.
And you know, being a member is a little bit different than being a customer, kind of. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're more you, and we see some of our members, wear their lifetime membership as a badge almost. Like I'm a lifetime member of Elegant Themes. And we've had that philosophy from the beginning. This kind of like, we're not just, a business, we're a community.
Absolutely.
And it started with the membership.
And I know when you first started bringing writers on the blog, extra writers or outside writers on the blog, I remember reading in the blog handbook that you created that, our goal with the blog was to solve the problems of our members, to say like, okay, these guys have, this should be kind of an extension of the membership almost. It's like, we want to provide them with, kind of fringe benefits to mm-hmm. plugging into our community. And I think that's something that I'd appreciated at the time, and I appreciate it because I was a customer/blogger.
Yeah.
And so now I like doing it too. And I think I get comments about that all the time about people really appreciating that too. So,
yeah.
Let's see. Leslie Bernal, she says, if you had to pick one major bump or obstacle along the way that was particularly, like you learned a lot from, it was very formative for how you do things now, what would it be?
Man, I feel like I have to rehash what I've already talked about once, which is kind of trusting our gut and doubling down on this really big project, which was Divi. And I think that was definitely like a moment where, maybe we could have been in trouble. I don't know. We were never too worried about it, but I mean, deep down, you have fears as a business owner,
will this work out?
Yeah, basically. And it was tough. So, I still think that was kind of like the biggest obstacle. Yeah, I mean,
just sticking to your guns,
basically.
There's lots of other obstacles,
that I didn't expect, though. I mean, kind of like all just like the.
What about the technology? I mean, stuff I'm sure you've had to learn or adapt to things that have been kind of curveballs. Has there been anything like, technology or learning curve wise that you feel like you've had to
overcome? I mean, I think the biggest learning curve for me is kind of the, I don't know what the right word is, but just like the, legal stuff and like
tax
stuff and kind of all these like, this business stuff that like is like, the least fun thing to do when running a business was probably some of the most difficult stuff because, it's hard to commit yourself to do that kind of stuff, to hire an accountant to take devs off the product and delay the launch so that we can update our system to collect VAT for the EU or do collect sales tax for where we have like affiliate nexuses in certain states, and now we're collecting taxes for 50 different places, and since we kind of were early adopters of these legislations, there wasn't software in place to take care of it for us, so we ended up building it all ourselves. And so that kind of stuff has been tough because it's like we have to do it, but at the same time, do we risk the success of the business by taking off our core team and working on these things? And how do we, how do I break up the team in that way, for these kind of like things you never thought about? And you think, well, our goal is to make a great product, to market it well and sell it, but there's so many other kind of moving parts and things you don't expect.
So what convinced you in those situations to sort of just take the plunge and keep moving forward when, you might have said, well, what if we just limit ourselves to not going into that direction? It might have felt safer. Did you have like a moment where you kind of said, no, we're definitely moving forward?
I mean, there's times where I've always played it safe, honestly. I go straight and then take care of the tax stuff. But it's still tough to see to know that, okay, we're not going to work on the next version of Divi for another 2 months,
okay.
Because we got to make this update to our system, and just a big learning experience.
All right. The next question we got is by Kim, and she's asking, what would you do differently if you had to start everything over from scratch today?
One thing I would do is not wait so long to actually like start my own thing, which was that I was kind of like selling these products on classified ads. And then when I finally made the plunge to create my own site, I was kind of amazed at the success of it. I should have, committed to myself earlier on. I guess trusting your gut more. Starting from scratch, I would have like hired more people more quickly, like I said earlier. I mean, if I could just teach myself all the things I know now, I would, but yeah.
It's a hard question.
There's a lot of things I would do differently, I guess. Yeah.
All right, cool. Let's jump ahead. This was submitted by multiple people. Is there a developer version of Divi in the works? And I know this one is really popular question. Mm-hmm. And if so, what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, so I think this question is, the point of this question is that, okay, people are worried about Divi as a framework getting too bloated. It's getting mm-hmm. too big, too many features, and they want to make sure that it doesn't slow down their site. I think that's what
sure.
it means by a developer version, although I'm not totally sure, but I can approach
well,
it from a couple of
to put it into context, the people that I saw, they would say stuff like, yeah, is there a Divi Lite coming out?
Yeah,
so I think you're on track, yeah.
Yeah, so as far as that is concerned, we won't be releasing a different version of Divi.
Mm.
I don't think that makes sense. I think if there's an issue with bloat, then we should solve that issue in Divi itself.
In Divi itself.
And there are ways we can do that. There are things we can improve. But it's also important to note that new features don't mean slower websites. I mean, that's not exactly how it works. A larger theme size, you look at that zip file and it's 6 megabytes.
Mm-hmm.
You look at some other file and it's 300 kilobytes. That doesn't mean that Divi's going to be slower. Mm. I mean, there's a lot more going on in it, but these features are kind of independent and they don't always affect page load, but can affect page loads when you add new modules. It makes your CSS file bigger. So that's one thing we want to definitely address in the future is kind of like consolidating that CSS file and taking out unneeded stuff, removing kind of like stuff that's overriding stuff. I mean, there's just so much going on there that there's definitely places we can trim the fat. So that's definitely something we're going to do. We've talked about it a lot. And not only that, but speaking as far as a developer update is concerned.
So it's more of a developer release instead of a developer product.
Right.
Like,
Yeah. So trimming it down and making it faster. I mean, we're always making it faster and improving performance where possible. And so we will have an update where we focus specifically on that.
Yeah.
But also not just making it faster, but from like a developer standpoint, which is important. Not only, like I said, you think people are talking about like a Divi Lite, but also a Divi developer version to me would mean a Divi that's more extendable, more developer documentation, more direction on which functions should be edited, which functions should not be edited. And this is something we really, really, really want to address.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to break people's third-party extensions and this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And right now, they don't have the direction they need to know what they can edit safely. And so this is going to be a really big focus for us moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come after Divi 3.0, which is going to be a very big update to that for us. And after that, we're going to focus on a developer update and full developer documentation, more hooks, more filters, all this kind of stuff. It's going to make it a lot easier to extend Divi and customize Divi in a way that won't break it.
Awesome. Let's jump to the next question. All right, so multiple people also asked this question. What are your thoughts on third-party add-ons and any plans for a marketplace?
My thoughts on third-party add-ons are that they're awesome. I think that it's really been a cool thing that happened, in the middle of last year where the community around Divi got big enough that it started to inspire third-party development kind of on its own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're seeing these communities and these developers kind of dedicating, their professional lives to Divi development and Divi third-party plugins and child themes and layout packs and this kind of stuff. And I think it's really great to think about kind of, how we benefit from that and then how they benefit from the success of Divi and how kind of there's this great, symbiotic relationship between us and third-party developers. So I think it's a really great thing for everybody.
Yeah. What about Marketplace?
Oh, yeah, and we do have plans to kind of help empower those third-party developers through our site someday, letting them sell their third-party plugins and extensions and stuff through our
through
website.
Through us.
Yeah.
Great. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be more announcements on that when they're ready.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And second to last multiple questions. So how and when do you decide to fix or not fix a particular issue or bug with the product?
Yeah, so that's a tough one. I mean, we prioritize bugs based on whether or not they're a real bug or not, which is that a lot of the bugs or issues that are reported to us and that kind of fill up our GitHub issue list are kind of third-party plugin compatibility issues. maybe small feature requests, not necessarily bugs. Maybe someone sees it as a bug, but, you know, this feature doesn't do what they want it to do.
Sure.
That kind of stuff. So obviously those are lower priority, and the things that actually are our fault and that break the theme are our number one priority, especially, you know, WordPress compatibility, like when 4.5 is released. And yeah, we need to make sure everything's working with that. So we prioritize like our bugs that are actually our fault, obviously. And then we have kind of like, we organize things on GitHub based on priority. So, mm-hmm. you know, high, low, medium priority, or like really, really important, where we have like an important tag.
Well, maybe what they're asking also is, you know, how do you prioritize, or do we even prioritize compatibility issues with other popular plugins?
Well, I mean, we do, we address a lot of compatibility issues, and we just do it based on how popular the plugin is and how many requests we get to fix the compatibility issue. Yeah.
Makes
sense. Pretty simple. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
I mean, we, to speak a little bit more on that, we have a direct line of communication between the support team and our dev team. So when a new issue is found from a customer reported to a tech support staff, they then open an issue on GitHub. It gets sent to Dustin, our QA guy, and he goes over the issue, figures out, is it really a bug or not?
Yeah.
Where does it fall in the line of bug versus compatibility issue and so on? He'll then assign it to one of our devs and then assign a priority, and we go from there.
Cool. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, so what's the long-term future of Divi as WordPress and web development changes?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I know people ask, like, you know, where do you see yourself in 10 years? Like, what's the next big thing that's going to happen? You can't really say. It's kind of, we're kind of adapting. The best thing you can do is adapt as you go along. So, but I see Divi. What I see for Divi is that a lot more maybe services popping up around it, using Divi, use services that kind of like that plug into Divi or enhance Divi in some way. I mean, we have a lot of ideas about this kind of stuff. We've played around with ideas like cloud storage for Divi library, maybe syncing your Divi library across all your client sites with a like an Elegant Themes hosted cloud storage. So you log into your client site and you have your library. You log into the second client site, you have your library.
Yeah,
so it's always
great.
There.
And, sort of like and Adobe Cloud does with a lot of their shared products and stuff.
I think that'd be a really cool service to add, kind of just charging for hosting, basically.
Yeah.
But so it's an example of a service that's really kind of like integrated into Divi and enhances Divi in a way that Divi can't do on its own. So see us potentially going in that kind of direction at some point. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's awesome. Okay, we got Mark Conger, and he wanted to know, do you have any other business ventures underway, and if so, what are they?
Nope. No, 100% focused on Elegant Themes. Yeah.
That's good. And we have like a few questions from Sharon, and these I think are our last like three questions. So you might have already addressed some of these, so feel free to say that. Do you have any doubts, fears, or anxieties about your business? And if so, how do you work through them?
Yeah, I'm definitely not free of anxiety. I don't think anyone is. And I do feel the pressure sometimes. And, you know, the way I work through that, I guess, is having really good backups, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, like
backup your data all the time,
backup everything a bunch of times, you know, put in good security measures, have a good disaster recovery plan, have a good security policy. There's these things that really are threatened, could be potentially, you know, business ending problems that,
that you don't want to be the guy in the UK who deleted his whole company with the wrong line of code.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like, in my head, I think about what are the worst case scenarios. Worst case scenarios you can usually solve, you know, with a little bit of preparation. So solving those helps, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like I worry sometimes, you know, if the site's going to go down, you know, maybe our payment gateway goes down, there's some kind of issue, and so I have like, you know, a bunch of reporting things that text me directly if something goes wrong. And so it seems maybe counterintuitive, but I sleep better at night knowing that at any moment I could be woken up at night if there's a problem, right? But I know that if there's a problem, I'll know about it and I'll fix it, you know?
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff you can solve just, you know, through services.
Preparation,
But beyond that, I mean, you just kind of, speaking to kind of the success of the business and whether or not, you know, do I fear that maybe someday, you know, we won't do so well, of course. But I think the best thing you can do is kind of trust in your team and trust in yourself. And we've built an amazing team. And I think the bigger we grow and the stronger we grow as a team, the less pressure I feel, because we can all depend on each other.
Yeah.
And so that's probably been the biggest stress reliever, is that
surrounding yourself with good people.
Even though it's like maybe kind of the bigger we get, the more pressure you think you might feel, but I think it's kind of the opposite. You kind of get more people on board with more talented people that help share the weight, you know.
Oh, great. Yeah. And One of the questions, the follow-up to that was just how has that fear maybe changed over time? And I think you might have just addressed that a little bit. But
yeah, so I guess it's I've managed it better over time, I suppose.
And a final thought, and as you know, we like to end the podcast interviews with a final thought, sort of a recap of the main points. And I think this question probably gets to it. Do you have any advice for people trying to build their own online-based businesses?
Yeah, so I think I'll approach this question kind of focused towards, you know, freelance developers who might be using Divi to build sites for their clients. Maybe they're starting their own web design agency, that kind of stuff. Although I've never done that before, I'll try to, you know, phrase my advice to them. I think I would try not to sell yourself short by not marketing yourself at all. I think maybe it's something people ignore, and it's been a really important part of our business is marketing, kind of, you know, putting some effort towards that.
Sure.
And one of the things you can do in the Divi community or the WordPress community as a freelance developer is really basic content marketing, which you know a lot about. And I think
some of our most successful community members have made their name by just saying, you know, here's what helps me with this specific problem.
Yeah. So actually we were, as we said in the beginning, we were just talking to Gino yesterday. Mm-hmm. He talked about how almost all of his referrals come in through
Divi tutorials, the free
resources
and stuff.
He's put online, and kind of like his activity in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think like this, the kind of like the most important pillar of, like, you know, marketing is to just be involved.
Yeah.
And so if you're trying to find customers, you're trying to find success, the best place to start is just getting involved in the community. Mm-hmm. Like, not necessarily looking to, you know, pitch yourself, your company, but just contributing.
Mm.
And it really does come back to you, and you have to trust that it will, you know.
Yeah.
And so I would just encourage people to, you know, write tutorials, write blog posts, you know, comment on blog posts, get into the Facebook groups, get into like the Advanced WordPress group, all these places where kind of like WordPress is thriving and there's other like-minded people, and you're going to build connections and find success that way, I think. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, that sounds like an awesome final thought. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you're, you know, busy running all this, so it means a lot that you take the time to do this.
I'm happy to be here, and thanks for interviewing me.
Well, that's all for this episode of Divi Nation. As always, I just want to give another big thank you to our guest, the one and only Nick Roach, for coming on the show and answering all of your awesome community questions. If you have any follow-up questions about the stuff that we talked about in this episode, feel free to leave them in the comments section on the Elegant Themes blog or wherever you're listening to this or watching it, if that happens to be YouTube. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I look forward to seeing you around the community. As always, I'll be back next week with another episode of Divi Nation.